Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The Group of Seven has vowed not to let Putin win his war against Ukraine as they announced new restrictive measures. But what about the officially enforced narrative claiming Ukraine is winning? The West's attempt to weaken Russia have failed. In fact, the West is weakening itself. Cross-talking the situation in Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli, in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. In Munich, we have Ralph Niemeyer. He is a leader of a German resistance movement. And in St. Petersburg, we cross to Gilbert Doctorow. He is an independent political analyst and author of Memoirs of an Expat Manager in Moscow during the 1990s. All right, gentlemen, cross-talk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. George, let me go to you first here. The G7 is up to its act again here. As if anybody really cares what the G7 says in war. But nonetheless, they have vowed that Putin will not win his war against Ukraine. What does that mean? What are they going to do about it, okay, other than inflict more misery on their own consumers and voters? Go ahead, George.
Well, that's exactly right. That's all they have at their disposal, which is to inflict misery on the Ukrainians and, of course, on their own electors. And when Viktor Orban said the other day that an oil embargo, completely cutting off from oil imports from Russia, would be like releasing a nuclear bomb on the Hungarian economy, Orban was speaking not just for Hungarians, but for many Europeans. This is an absolutely nonsensical idea of cutting yourself off from energy imports, you know, because the only alternative is simply the destruction of your own economies. And it's quite clear that there is no ready means at the Europeans' disposal to replace Russian oil, to replace Russian gas. So all of it is just simply hot air. The EU, I mean, Ursula von der Leyen, who is supposedly the chief executive of the EU, she's the president of the European Commission, she has no enforcement mechanism. She can't force Europeans to do one thing or another. She can talk long and loud, but ultimately, Europeans are going to have to decide, are they going to starve? Are they going to freeze? Are they just going to bring their economies to a halt? Or are they just going to live their lives? And they're not going to follow the diktats of Ursula von der Leyen and the European Commission. And as for the Ukrainians, well, no one really cares very much about them. I mean, they're just simply cannon fodder as part of the US-EU-NATO agenda.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Gilbert. I mean, all of the Russia now is the most sanctioned country ever, okay? How has that helped the Ukrainians at all? Go ahead, in St. Petersburg.
It doesn't in any way. It's a curious thing that Western analysts have spoken about their appreciation of Russia's military effort up till now, and they say that it's proven Russia's weakness. And it's quite extraordinary because the Russian effort has captured a territory about the size of the United Kingdom since the start of the special military operation. It also bears mention that Russia is certainly the only country on Earth, with the, perhaps the exception of China, which is able to withstand the sanctions from hell that the United States and its allies have delivered. That's often overlooked. So Russia is proving itself to be strong in remarkable ways and in ways that no one in Europe could equal. And that very fact adds to the hostility, the envy of European countries and their leaders with respect to Russia. So it's a bit paradoxical that Russia's strength feeds to these vicious information war efforts by the Europeans and by the United States to compensate for their real loss of ground in the competition with Russia.
Ralph, let me go to you in Munich. Many of us would have expected the Germans would play a much more prominent role instead of just being subservient to Washington, because Germany has the most to lose and is losing the most, I would say. I mean, I've never seen a political class of a major country willing to turn off the switches of their entire economy because somebody with no real power in Brussels told them to. Oh, and oh, by the way, you know, I never thought I would have seen a German chancellor, who I refer to as Sergeant Schultz on this program, be openly insulted by the president of the United States and get away with it. I mean, what kind of leadership does Germany have? What kind of leadership does Europe have? Go ahead, Ralph.
Yeah, you just said it right. We are obviously not our own man, and Mr. Scholz is not his own man when being on the international stage. He obviously took orders from Washington, and it became quite visible a couple of days ago when he gave a speech addressing us Germans in English. So we wonder whether he lost his vocabulary book for us, or whether he's rather reporting back to Washington, because that's the truth. We are not sovereign. Since the 1990s, when we thought that we were sovereign after the Second World War and after the Berlin Wall had come down, that we would have our own statehood and nationhood and be sovereign, and well, we would get a peace treaty eventually with all nations that we harmed during the Second World War. And you now see that actually Germany is doing exactly what Washington wants them to do. First, they say we are not going to send any arms into conflict, which is against our law and against the people's law, actually. It's against international law to do that. But suddenly we do it a week later, and there must have been some instructions from Washington, and they received them in Ramstein at the air base here in Germany, from where all American wars are still being executed.
Yeah, but Ralph, the behavior of the German government and other governments in the European Union make them co-belligerents in this conflict. I think that, you know, that should be noted, particularly because of the regime type in Kyiv. Germans, of all people, should be very aware of that. And it's completely whitewashed. And we'll talk about whitewashing a little bit later. George, I want to go back to you. The G7, you know, Putin must not win. But I thought Ukraine was winning. How do you explain this to me? Maybe I'm missed something. Go ahead.
Well, that's the point, that the G7 and the Western powers can't really make up their mind. Is Russia just this hopeless, mediocre, militarily incompetent, demoralized, chaotic state that is being absolutely trounced and hammered by the plucky Ukrainians? Or does Ukraine need weapons desperately, and you know, we need to send everything that we've got in order to ensure that Putin doesn't prevail? They can't really get the narrative right, and so they go from one to another just in order to persuade the public that somehow by sending in lots and lots of arms into Ukraine, they are not actually endangering safety of Europeans and Americans.
But George, for 8 years, NATO has been training the Ukrainian army. For 8 years, arms have been pouring into Ukraine. I mean, so more training, more arms. Let me throw that to Gilbert here. I mean, the Western powers have been doing this for 8 years, and this is the result they're getting. So why would you? It's like pouring bad money in, pouring good money after bad money. Go ahead, in St. Petersburg.
Effectiveness doesn't exist in the vocabulary of the European leaders. They are posturing. It is all posturing. Weapons which have been sent in till recently have been old. They have been ineffective, and they have been delivered in a way where they are destroyed upon arrival. That does not bother or fluster the Western presidents and prime ministers. They're concerned with their relationship with the United States, not really with their relationship with Ukraine. And they want to demonstrate and outbid one another.
Well, I mean, Ralph, I mean, what does Ukraine mean to the German people? I mean, if you could speak for your entire people or just yourself here, but I mean, why is Germany willing to sacrifice so much for a country that has no strategic value whatsoever to Germany or the West?
Well, as I said before, I believe that this is at the orders of someone else. Germany is particularly not interested in Ukraine. We hardly know much about it. I mean, our culture is so different. You would rather think that Polish people are closer to West Ukrainians, but even there I see a lot of differences. But here in Germany, people are saying, okay, people are suffering there. Let's take them on as refugees. We want to help. We want to look good with that and all that. Yes, but on the other hand, we don't understand as a German people who Ukrainians are and what they are. And not many of us even recall the recent history from 100 years ago or from 77 years ago. I mean, last night we had the ambassador of Ukraine on a German TV show again, and he's, Mr. Melnik, he's quite extravagant in this sense that he's accusing people, and he said openly, we Germans, we would owe them for 10 million soldiers who lost their lives in freeing us from Nazism. He's turning it completely around. I mean, Stepan Bandera, the ultra-nationalist leader of Ukraine at that time, was a strong ally of Mr. Hitler. So who fought against who here and who freed us? I mean, I wish that there would be clarity, at least here in Germany, on that matter, because we wanted to be freed from fascism. But Mr. Bandera and Mr. Hitler certainly did not. They did the opposite.
Yeah, George. I mean, we, you and I have talked about on the Gaggle Hour podcast how the narratives have been flipped. Okay, where the good guys are not, the good guys are now the bad guys are now the good guys. Go ahead, 15 seconds before we go to the break.
Absolutely. And if you listen to Sergeant Scholz's speech on VE Day, he kind of pretty much suggested that somehow Germany was one of the good guys in World War II, and the Russians were the bad guys, or somehow, you know, the
All right,
allies.
George, hold that thought. Hold that thought. We have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on the situation in Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the situation in Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Gilbert in St. Petersburg. In the first part of the program, we were talking about who's giving orders to whom here. You have a dissenting opinion. Go right ahead.
Yes. I cannot say definitely who is giving directions to Mr. Scholz, but I would like to introduce a very important consideration which has been overlooked. That is the Greens. He is in a coalition government, and he was dependent on agreements with the Greens to come to power. The Greens are not just any old party. The Greens were founded by Joschka Fischer and Rudi the Red, and they had a program which included a foreign policy. And their foreign policy positions were always very anti-Russian. In the last 20 years, in the European Parliament, the German Greens have been the most vocal in attacking Russia, in trying to sanction Russia. Therefore, it should come as no surprise that when the Greens became full members of the SPD coalition in following the last elections in Germany, they have come in with strongly anti-Russian positions. They needed no nod from the United States. The question is, who is stronger than the cabinet? And I think we all have an understanding now that Mr. Scholz is a very weak personality, and his colleagues in the cabinet from the Green Party, they may be ignorant, inexperienced, and often quite show themselves to be stupid, but they are determined.
Yep.
And they are determinedly anti-Russian.
Well, very much agree with Gilbert, the position of the Green Party. However, I would add another layer to that is that Washington is never like social Democrats, okay, at all, okay? They've always been very suspicious. They're going to make a deal with, you know, it goes all back to keep the Russians out, the Germans down, and the Americans in. And the social Democrats always challenge it one way or another. Go ahead, Ralph.
Yeah, actually, I do agree with both of you. I mean, the Green Party that I knew was Petra Karin Kelly 40 years ago. I interviewed her as a young journalist, and she was demonstrating and in Ramstein as well as in Mutlangen against the deployment of Pershing rockets and so on, and cruise missiles and so on. So that is a long way that the Greens have come. When in 1999, the Kosovo War broke out, and with the first ever German military, direct military participation after 1945. This was done by Schröder and Fischer. Fischer, the Green foreign minister at that time, who made that shift and who actually, he vowed that he would never have Auschwitz happen again, saying there were concentration camps run by Serbs in the territory of the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia and in Kosovo, and which was all not true. It's a bit like the situation we have now with Buchtar, where they say there were war crimes committed and later
you're going exactly where we want to go. I wanted to talk about the information war. Let me go to George here. That's one thing that we keep hearing, George, over again. The Russians have lost the information war. Well, I mean, if you're in the West, if all dissent, any contrarian view on the situation that's in Ukraine is shut down, I mean, then what's the point of having an information war if one side can't speak? And that's essentially what has happened. Go ahead, George.
It's worse than that. It's not just that they've closed down RT and Sputnik and want to ban any access to Russian media in the West. What the Western governments are also engaged in is in a vast smearing operations. There are any number of organizations and think tanks funded by Western governments and the EU whose sole purpose is to go around writing reports about Putin bots on the net or Kremlin disinformation agents or, you know, the Russian tools of disinformation. That's what they do. They are lavishly funded by the European government, the UK government, and they publish these reports, completely worthless, but they serve to create this atmosphere that there's a sinister Russian bots all over the place putting out all kinds of disinformation, trying to fool the Western public. So yeah, I mean, then that it, you know, what happens then is, of course, people don't want to listen to that, and they just listen exclusively to the absolute nonsense talked by Western governments. Case in point, yesterday's speech on May the 9th, delivered by British Defense Minister Ben Wallace, in which he not only, of course, likened Russia to Nazi Germany, he actually went further and demeaned and disparaged the performance of the Red Army in World War II. For him, you know, the Soviet performance was pretty much Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, and then Stalin sending millions of people to perish before the German tanks. Oh, well, that's the way the Russians fight their wars. They just send millions of people because they don't care about humans. You know, they just, it's just massive humanity. That's what you get, you know, and if that's winning the information war, okay. It just institutes the big lie.
But it just shows their weakness. That's why they believe in censorship, because they don't want a counter-argument. You know, Gilbert, one of the things that very frustrating for me is on December 17th, when the Russians sent their ultimatums, because that's what they were, one to the NATO and one to the United States. Now, you know, you can go, or at least you could go, to the Kremlin website. You could go to TASS.com, and you would get all of these documents. I had guest after guest before February 24th say, but, you know, they're not messaging. We don't know what's in Putin's head. Why don't you just go and read the press conference? Why don't you read the press release? It was all out there. It was all out there on display. George and I have talked about this countless number of times. You're surprised? They telegraphed what they were going to do from the very beginning. Nobody listened. And with this information war and shutdown of dissenting views, it's only going to get worse. Go ahead, Gilbert.
Well, I think we have to put the information war in context. The information war substitutes for a real war. It is a virtual world, and that is the bubble in which Washington and most of the United States exists. The United States for the last 30 years has been incapable of winning a real ground war. And so this is taking its place. I wouldn't get too excited about Russia losing the information war, considering where we have been since Russiagate. The notion that Russia would be given a fair hearing of any kind is excluded. However, in the real world, what will count at the end of the day is boots on the ground. And what Russia does or does not do to achieve its objectives, which one might say right now is pretty clear, it is to take and keep control of the south and east of Ukraine and to keep the Ukraine from the Black Sea and to so limit Ukraine that it is not a military threat to Russia at any time in the future with or without NATO. So in that real world of boots on the ground, we'll see how the Russians do. And they're being given every chance to succeed because the means or logistics for Western supplies to Ukraine are very attenuated and are very ineffective. But time will tell.
You know, Ralph, the Western media's coverage of this is just simply appalling, and it's obviously intentional. My position has always been it's Russia's timetable, and Russia will determine the outcome when it's ready, when it wants to do that. But, you know, one of the things that is never really talked about is that why did we get into this situation in the first place? Because of insecurity in Europe, the very poor security infrastructure that allowed this to happen. And Russia will not offer negotiations. It will say these are our conditions and these will be met. It will be another ultimatum. And I think Europe is not prepared or even willing to think about that. Go ahead, Ralph.
Yeah, you're absolutely right here as well. Now, what I have to note is that there's a rewriting of history at the moment.
Yep.
I mean, we see in all our papers here in Germany, especially those who are close to the Green Party, like Taz, the Tageszeitung, they are kind of scripting what Mrs. Baerbock is saying and even what Mr. Scholz is going to say. They are putting in this context where they say Stalin had already planned to begin a war well before Hitler rose to power.
No.
This was yesterday on the headlines.
Yeah.
So they're comparing Putin either with Stalin or with Hitler, but sometimes they're not clear about it. Mr. Scholz likes to link him to Hitler. George,
you and I, we've crossed this bridge before, okay? I mean, I remember in the New York Review of Books, it was like in 1991, 92, 93, something like that, okay? You know, the new revisionists, and this is happening again, except for what the difference is some of those were crazy academics. Now politicians are in on it, too. Go ahead, George.
Yes, there's no question of that. And that within the next 10, 20 years, the willfully ahistorical, anti-historical Germans will have convinced themselves that they were actually victims in World War II, that they were actually the victims of aggression by Stalin. When Yatsenyuk went on German TV, I pretty much told them that this is what the Soviets had committed these terrible atrocities against you when they invaded Berlin. He knew his audience. And again, yesterday, on May the 9th, Ben Wallace in his speech, he started talking about the horrific rapes and murders that were committed by the Red Army when he was liberating Europe from fascism. So that's it. So now we know, when we look back on World War II, who were the good guys, who were the bad guys,
George, what do you bet? I bet you a couple of beers on this one. Before it's all said and done, it was the Russians that tricked the Japanese into attacking Pearl Harbor. That's true history. It sounds comical right now, but we're going down that path. That's where a very ahistorical one. When you're ahistorical, you're looking for a catastrophe. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. Many thanks to my guests in Budapest, Munich, and in St. Petersburg. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.